one of the most important questions you can ask yourself when trying to rediscover a proper human diet is, what food should I eat? But perhaps more importantly are, what things should I not eat? What things should I not drink? What should I avoid in order to reclaim the optimal health that is my birthright? The birthright of every human on the planet is optimal health. And I've got a great guest with me today, Dr. Chris Kenobi, a physician and ophthalmologist, a researcher. He's published multiple papers. He's written a book. And we're going to dive into this, what he thinks is the most dangerous substance in the modern diet that either you or one of your loved ones or many of your loved ones are eating every day that is contributing to chronic disease. And they have no idea. They're actually under the delusion that it's a health food, that it's actually good for them. So I want you to pay careful attention as I introduce Dr. Chris Kenobi. Doctor, welcome. So glad to have you.
Thank you, Ken. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here with you. Thank you.
We've been trying to make this happen for a while, haven't we?
Yeah, we have.
Yeah, well, we finally got it going. So let's get into this. Tell everybody just a little bit about yourself, and we will dive into the meat of the issue.
You bet. So Ken, I'm a physician. I have a specialty in ophthalmology. And I left practice 8 years ago now to pursue nutrition research. And I really got into this, and I'll keep this really brief, but I got into this this area out of my, was born out of my own suffering. Which came, you know, in my case, came out of arthritis, and I went on a partial paleo diet back in 2011, and I had this huge improvement in my arthritis. And then I read Lauren Cordain's book, The Paleo Answer, and I began to investigate. I eventually came across Weston Price's research back in 2013. And this is the lens that I've seen all of nutrition research through to this day, is through Weston Price's work. And so I connected processed foods and particularly vegetable oils to age-related macular degeneration, AMD, the leading cause of irreversible vision loss and blindness in people over the age of 50 worldwide. And by about 2018, 2019, I was so convinced, Ken, that vegetable oils were the primary drivers of chronic disease, overweight, obesity, and chronic disease, heart disease, cancers, metabolic disease, diabetes, all those things, that I went public with that. And that's kind of the journey I've been on over the past about 5 years now, 4 or 5 years is primarily that.
Excellent. And I find it interesting, perhaps telling, that so many healthcare providers who are now in this sphere trying to rediscover a proper human diet along with you and I, so many of us started because we once considered ourselves not immortal, but, you know, pretty bulletproof. I mean, I'm a doctor, for God's sake. I should be pretty healthy. And then when our health started to falter, and I developed severe obesity and prediabetes, and you developed the arthritis and other things, we're like, this can't be right. I'm a smart guy. I'm supposed to know what I'm talking about. How is this happening to me? And then in the process of trying to fix ourselves, we wind up stumbling upon these nuggets of truth that lie very shallowly buried. If you're just willing to look for them, you start to uncover them pretty quickly. And then we all obviously feel compelled ethically and morally to share this with our patients first, but then ultimately with the entire world. And I think that's very telling that you see that trend over and over in our space.
Right. And I know that your audience knows this better than any, Ken, but you know, to this day, I find that probably 99.7% of allopathically trained medical doctors like you and I do not have a clue about ancestral eating, and they do not have a clue that westernized processed foods are the drivers of all this chronic disease. And it's not really their fault, because you and we're not trained that way in medical school, right? And and to this day, I mean, it's a travesty, but that's the state of medicine today.
No, I totally agree. And I firmly believe that with even some rudimentary training in anthropology, and most medical students don't get any training in nutrition, much less anthropology, but with just a smidge of anthropology training, the average doctor would quickly realize, oh, the diet that we've eaten for the last 3.5 million years, that's probably very important. I should probably know, at least as close as we can know, what that diet is, because I bet that's important. I bet that matters. But the average doctor, medical student, has no clue that they even need to look at anthropology or paleoanthropology. It's sad, but it's true. So I'm live with Dr. Chris Kenobi, and this is being recorded inside of our private community. If you'd like to become a member, there's a link down in the show notes, but only members of my tribe can ask Dr. Kenobi questions as we go through his presentation, which I think you're going to find jaw-dropping. I will pause from time to time to take some questions from tribe members, if that's okay with you, Doc.
Oh, absolutely, Ken.
All right. Let's start with a question, and there's actually been several of these already. And both Tanya and several other people said they used to have a ton of trouble with dry eye before they went keto or carnivore. And even on regular keto, Tanya still had problems, but with 80-20 fat to protein, carnivore, her dry eyes are gone. And Francisco says reverse dry eyes with keto. And I hear that over and over and over again. As an ophthalmologist, can you give us just a little bit of what's going on behind the curtain there? Why do so many people suffer from dry eyes? And how is this so easily remediated? By including a diet full of ancestrally appropriate, healthy animal fat.
Right. I'm shocked this is our first question, you know, about dry eyes. To me, there's so many, you know, very, very big questions asked. But I suffered with dry eyes myself a lot of my life. And when I went on a paleo diet, and then eventually when the very first night back in about 2014, I think it was, that I ate liver for the first time, I woke up hours later in the night with my dry eyes greatly resolved. And this is, and then with my investigations, I believe the answer is primarily that most people are vitamin A deficient, and vitamin A plays a huge role in dry eye syndrome and in our immune response and our autoimmune response, if that happens to be. But, this is something, again, that, you know, allopathic medicine and ophthalmology completely overlooks. This is never the recommendation, but I think when you go to this, you know, go to a keto diet, you're eating more meat and possibly organs and butter or animal fats, eggs, those kind of things, you're getting vitamin A. Even if you don't eat liver, you're getting vitamin A. And I think that's the answer.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's vitamin A, perhaps a little bit vitamin E, and then also all of the essential animal-derived fatty acids that people can be quite deficient in if they're not eating enough animal meat, animal fat. So thank you for that. Now let's get into your presentation, Doc. And I'm gonna run these slides. You tell me what you need and I'll put it up, and I'm gonna give you the floor, and I want you to explain to people what's the most dangerous substance in the modern diet that's causing all this chronic medical disease and suffering.
Okay, Ken, if you'll go, let's just go to slide 11 for a minute, if we could. Yeah, right there. And your slides are coming up a little different than mine. But anyway, you know, if you look at this, ladies and gentlemen, you'll see that in 1865, plant and animal foods, these are whole foods, made up 96% of the diet. But by 2009, let me back up, and only 4% of the diet was refined sugar. So that's the only processed food there was. And then by 2009, you can see that ultra processed food made up 63% of the diet. And that's seed oils, sugars, refined grains, and trans fats. And so the rest of it was, you know, plant and animal foods, but even those have problems, as you all know. So can we go to the next slide, Ken? Yeah. So here, Ken, take a look, and you've probably seen me present this before, but this is a graph of the vegetable oil consumption in the United States, and some of those, some of the pop-ups there at the top are not quite there. But if you go back, ladies and gentlemen, to 1865, you'll see that 100% of the fats, added fats to the diet, were from animal fat. We didn't have any vegetable oils. The only one we had was olive oil, and almost no one had that. And then we got cottonseed oil in 1866. By 1900, though, you can see 99% of added fats in the diet still came from animal fat. And this is, and I'll get into this in a moment if you want me to, Ken, but this is when we were very healthy. So if you just jump all the way to the far right, as the curve goes up, you'll see that by 2005, 86% of our added fats came from vegetable oils. 86%. Well, that was, by 2010, we're 80 grams a day of vegetable oils. That's 720 calories worth. That's 32% of U.S. caloric intake. This, I believe, and no one's questioned me on this, is the greatest change to the diet for mankind in all of history. And this brought with it an extreme increase in omega-6 fat. So can we go to the next slide, Ken?
And so these fats from vegetable oils would be corn oil, soybean oil, canola oil, sunflower, safflower, all the different industrial seed oils.
Right.
Yes. And I also, let me just add this, and we'll go to the next slide, Doc, for perspective. And this is why I think medical students should get at least a little training in anthropology. So if you look at from 1910, that's when cottonseed oil started to really come into the modern diet. And you see that bump at about 1910. Before 1910, what percentage of human existence did humans eat no added fat whatsoever except the fat that came from animals? So beef tallow, lard, duck fat, chicken fat, goose fat, all the animal fats. That's 99.7 or 99.8% of our time on this planet. We never ate more than a drop or two of vegetable oil our entire life. But so then for the last little 0.1% of our time on this planet, now 86% of the fat that we ingest each day and each year comes from vegetable seed oils that are industrially processed in a factory and are not in any way natural. They don't occur naturally. You cannot go out into the wild and procure canola oil or soybean oil or corn oil, vegetable oil, plant butter. Those things are impossible to find in the wild because they don't exist. They only exist inside of chemical factories. Next slide.
Right. So here, I hope everybody can eventually see this, that this is our published data on heart disease deaths in the red there. This is over the last more than century, since 1900. And you'll see so heart disease deaths in the red versus vegetable oil in the black. And you see this very, extraordinary positive correlation. So a very strong relationship between those two. And then we see saturated fat in the purple line there, that's virtually a flat line. So saturated fat increased about 5 grams during the entire 20th century. So in my view, if people were to go back, had we gone back and had just this slide, which, it did take a few months for my colleague researcher, Maria Stojanowska, to pull all this data together. But this graph alone, I think, would prove to the world that that saturated fat had nothing to do with coronary heart disease. There's just no relationship whatsoever.
Absolutely. And all of my viewers, they absolutely know the difference between correlation and causation. And this graph does show a very strong correlation. Doesn't prove anything, but just the common sense view of looking at this and going, well, saturated fat really didn't go up at all, but vegetable oils skyrocketed and the curves kind of overlap. That's kind of weird. And I would hazard a guess that the hazard ratio of vegetable oil to heart disease deaths is a much higher hazard ratio than most of the association studies that are published by the Harvard School of Public Health when it comes to red meat and all that kind of stuff.
Right. And exactly, Ken, I agree with you 100%. And although correlation is not causation, on the flip side, you must have correlation in order to prove causation. And yes. So here, you do not have any substantial correlation between saturated fat and coronary heart disease deaths, but you've got this extraordinary relationship between, you know, positive relationship between vegetable oil and coronary heart disease.
So if a researcher were going to research something just by looking at this graph, you would think that a smart researcher wouldn't say, you know, I'm really going to look into the correlation between saturated fat and heart disease deaths. That doesn't really make common sense there, does it?
Sure does it. Right. Yeah. You wouldn't look at this and ever think, that you should be investigating saturated fat. It would be precisely the opposite, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, so we could go down to the next slide if you want to, Ken.
Okay. The 14.
Yeah.
Okay.
So for those who can't see this, you know, we can see that since 1909, that the total fat has gone up, but we can see that almost all of that is related to vegetable oil fats and not animal fats. So animal fats have been on the decline over the past century. And, you know, we're consuming dramatically less animal fat today than we did back in 1909. And, you know, for those who aren't aware, and I don't think I have all this data here, but we really had no coronary heart disease in the 19th century. It was an extraordinarily rare disorder. I think there is either 8 or 9 papers on coronary heart disease in the entire 19th century. Whereas only 2 or 3 of those related to thrombotic disease. In other words, a myocardial infarction or heart attack. But the first documented heart attack in the United States was in 1912, published by James Herrick. And then by 1930s, coronary heart disease became the leading cause of death and has remained the leading cause of death ever since. But it's, again, precisely in correlation to this increase in vegetable oils. And if we go to the next slide, Ken. Okay. So this is the reason why this is so important, these vegetable oils, is because the vegetable oils accumulate in our fat. And this is a graph from Stefan Guyonnet, where he put together the omega-6 fat called linoleic acid, the primary omega-6 type of fat. And this is a total of 38 studies between 1959 and 2008 that showed how much omega-6 fat was in our body fat. And if you can see this, in 1959, Americans averaged 9.1%. So we're accumulating this fat in our body fat. And by 2008, we're at 21.5%. So now I don't have this on the graph, but there are studies of there's only about 4 in all of history, as far as I know, of populations that were consuming native traditional ancestral diets and had their adipose, their body fat, tested for omega-6. And these were populations, they were in the New Zealand Maori and New Zealand Europeans, and then the Pukapukans of two islands, Pukapuka and Rarotonga. And these 4 populations all averaged 2.86% omega-6 linoleic acid in their body fat. They weren't consuming any oils, and I've documented all this in my new book. They had no oils. So this is what I will submit to all of us, is where we should be ancestrally in our body fat omega-6 is under, it really should be under 3, maybe 4%. Yep. Probably under 3%. And we can only get there by eliminating all of our vegetable oils.
And absolutely. And so linoleic acid is an essential fatty acid, but right, only in tiny, tiny amounts. And so, like you see on the right hand side of this graph, if your body fat contains 21.5% linoleic acid, that's a toxic amount, in my opinion. And I think Dr. Kenobi would agree. But you do have to have some linoleic acid, but it's just like water. If you're thirsty, you drink. But if you drink 45 gallons of water a day, you would soon be dead. The same goes for linoleic acid. And there is some that occurs naturally in meat. And that's perfectly fine. It's not that linoleic acid is poison. It's the dose. And the dose that we're currently eating in modern society is orders of magnitude higher than our ancestors would have ever eaten.
That's exactly right, Ken. And, you know, this is this has been a challenging concept for some people, because they immediately think that omega-6 linoleic acid is bad. But absolutely every chemical, every element known has a dose that we should get. So that, as Ken said, it's the dose that makes the poison. And we need all of these things. But every single nutrient you can think of, including water, oxygen, every element, every mineral, they all have a sweet spot, and we need to be in that sweet spot. And you will get linoleic acid in absolutely every natural food there is. You cannot name a food, I've investigated this, that does not have fat naturally. So even if your diet was made up entirely of something you think didn't have any fat, like oranges or apples or white rice, you will get all the linoleic acid you need, because all of these foods are made with tiny amounts of omega-6 linoleic acid and tiny amounts of omega-3 alpha linolenic acid. So you cannot get too little. I'm convinced it's impossible to get too little. The only way to do that is to go on a completely 100% fat removed diet. And that is incredibly hard to remove fat from a food. You can't even do it with like protein powder that you would think is entirely protein. Even that would have enough fat to supply your linoleic acid. So nobody can get too little unless you have a chemically made diet. You will only get generally too much. And that's the problem for 99.9% of our world, I'm convinced, or at least well over 99%, is they're getting way too much omega-6 linoleic acid. And it's because it's in our it's just ubiquitous in our food supply, these oils. So you want me to keep going here, Ken?
Yeah, let's go.
So can we go down to slide 17, because this will illustrate this point that I want to make. Yeah, this one. So this is one that's not in my upcoming book, but this is that omega-6 linoleic acid this is for Americans, this is for the US. And what we did is we modeled the American diet in 1865. And this is when people were, they were consuming pretty significant amounts of meat. I mean, we were probably the second most carnivorous population on the planet, second only to the Inuit, as far as I know, the Eskimos. Or what people would have been, you know, would have called Eskimos at one point. But anyway, so we consumed lots of meat. We consumed lots of potatoes, lots of grains, wheat primarily, lots of pork, eggs. You know, basically that was our ancestral diet. But anyway, we modeled this diet, and this is with ancestrally raised foods. And you can see right there in 1865. The approximate consumption of omega-6 linoleic acid was 2.4 grams. That's 1.1% of total calories. Now you can see that increased by 1909 to 2.23%, or 2.4 grams. That's published. And then by 1999, we're at 7.21% of our diet as omega-6 linoleic acid. That's 18 grams. And by 2008, 11.8% of the diet as omega-6 linoleic acid. And with this, as I've shown in other presentations and we could talk about here, we've had, you know, an explosion of obesity. So obesity went from 1.2% in men in the 19th century to 42.5% by 2016 or 2018, 42.5%, right? So it went up 35-fold. Coronary heart disease obviously exploded. Cancers. Cancer was, you know, affected one in 188 people. I'm sorry, cancer deaths were responsible for one in 188 deaths in Boston in 1811. Cancer took the lives of 17% of people in U.S. in 1900. And by 2010, roughly, cancer took the lives of 31.1% of people. Again, about one in three. So we went from one in 188 deaths due to cancer to one in three, parallel with this omega-6 increase. And of course, along with that, all the processed foods too. Very similar scenario with diabetes, and we can get into that, but diabetes was an extraordinarily rare disorder in the 19th century. And of course, today it affects 13% of the population. Age-related macular degeneration, Parkinson's, I'm not sure about Parkinson's, I'm sorry, Alzheimer's disease, metabolic syndrome. These diseases were unknown in the 19th century.
Yes.
Entirely unknown. So they've come about as we've increased our consumption of all these processed foods. So can we go down to the next slide, Ken? So this is what I'll submit to everyone. This is what, again, where the body fat is I was talking about in these healthy populations. Their body fat, omega-6 linoleic acid, was 2.86%. But in all the westernized populations since 1990, I've tallied up all these, and our body fat is 14.2% omega-6 linoleic acid. This is the recipe for disaster. So, and can we go down one more slide? Let's see. Should be go to 19, Ken. There we go. So, oh, I guess this is not exactly what I thought it was, but let me just point out to everyone that omega-6 linoleic acid was in 1865 for Americans was 1.1% of the diet. It's 1/90th of the diet. But by 2008, omega-6 linoleic acid was 11.8% of the diet. It is 1/8 of the diet. So we went from 1/90th of our diet as this one single type of molecule to 1/8 of our diet becoming this one molecule. That makes that a poison. And it's a poison, it becomes progressively more poisonous as you get over 4% of the diet as omega-6 linoleic acid. So we don't have to just go through these, but we can, Ken, if you want to.
Okay, either way, you can just pick out the ones and I'll go to them. But anything you think is relevant that will help people understand that, understand what I think is a very, very important issue. When I first started talking about the keto diet back in 2017, I had three steps. Step one, eliminate all sugar, added and natural. Step two, eliminate all grains. Step three, eliminate all vegetable seed oils. That was my first three recommendations in 2017. And I have not changed those as of yet. And I may rearrange them soon based on your research and others, but I still think those are the three most unnatural things that are now in our modern diet to the point where they become a poison.
Right. And I echo that again, 100%, Ken. I have maintained since I went public with my research back in 2016 that the three main problems are refined flours, refined sugars, and vegetable oils. And if I think if you eliminated those, we'd eliminate 90 some percent of our chronic, of our obesity, overweight, obesity and chronic disease right there. So
absolutely. I totally agree. It would bankrupt big pharma. If just people, yeah, if everybody in the country removed those three things from their diets, it would bankrupt big pharma and probably financially hobble big medicine literally overnight.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So, this slide actually relates to total meat consumption over the last 200 years, versus heart disease. Do you want me to address this at all, Ken?
If you think it's pertinent, just run over this slide really quickly and then we'll move on.
Well, this slide's a little bit messed up, going over the internet or whatever, but I think everybody could, if they see it, and I'll describe it, but total meat consumption was something like 230 pounds in the US back in 1800. And it began to decline actually. And it had, it was declining by around the early 1900s. But this was precisely when, in 1912, was when the first documented heart attack took place in the United States. And then in the 1930s, when meat consumption hit its nadir, the lowest point in the past 200 years of history, is when coronary heart disease became the leading cause of death. And then, meat consumption went up and coronary heart disease has remained the leading cause of death ever since. So again, if you look, anybody who thinks that meat, whether it's, beef or chicken, pork or all meat, is related to heart disease, all you have to do is just look at really this one slide. And again, you come to the conclusion, it makes no sense whatsoever to blame meat whatsoever.
Yeah. Once again, if you were a epidemiological researcher and you were looking for a good slam dunk study to do, looking at this chart, you'd be like, yeah, I don't think doesn't look like red meat probably causes heart disease. I'm probably going to waste my time if I look into that. Yet that's what we hear announced on mainstream media almost every day. Let's take a tribe member question real quick, Doc. Sure. Christine says, are cataracts caused by glycation?
I would just say, first of all, we don't have an answer to that. To be a really good cataract surgeon, and my career was spent, primarily as a cataract surgeon. It's like being, it's like the same as being a cardiovascular surgeon. You don't need to know anything about what causes heart disease to be a great cardiovascular surgeon, right? And it's the same way with being an eye surgeon. You don't need to know what causes cataracts to be the best cataract surgeon in the world. Having said that, there's no question that, smoking, diabetes, deficiencies of certain vitamins, probably B2, is important. And definitely, anything that's pro-oxidative plays a role there. But beyond that, this is not an area that I feel that I can answer or anybody can answer in the world. And I will tell everybody that people on totally ancestral diets do get cataracts. And it could be that they have some nutrient deficiencies, but there are people all over the world historically in every nation, every continent, India, Africa, South America, you name it, who get white cataracts, and they didn't have options for processed foods. So we may be destined to get cataracts one way or another, or it could be that maybe some of these people had, even though they had ancestral diets, they still had deficiencies.
Gotcha. The people in our private community know you're an ophthalmologist, Doc, so you're probably going to get some more eye questions as we go along.
Sure.
No worries. I hope that's okay.
Yeah. Oh, so, yeah.
Which slide do you want to go to next?
Let's talk about overweight obesity if we go to the very next slide. Because okay. I think this is probably, this is the main interest. Again, this slide doesn't come up naturally there. But everybody can, I hope, can see that way back, this is the increase in obesity in the United States between 1900 and 2018. And obesity was 1.2% in the year 1900. We're at 13% by 1960. We're all the way, and it should be, we're at, it's cut off there, what, 42.5% by 2016 or 2018. And then can we go on down to the next slide, Ken?
Yes.
And so this is the correlation between obesity and vegetable oils. And we just see this striking correlation all the way, with vegetable oils, between obesity and vegetable oils. So if we could, you want to just go on down to the next one?
And again, this correlation does not prove that vegetable oils are causing the obesity epidemic. But as Dr. Kenobi said earlier, you have to have a correlation to even pretend like there's going to be a causation. And so this would be somewhere that absolutely should be investigated. This should be researched immediately. But to my knowledge, there's never been any long-term studies in human beings about the long-term health and safety of ingesting this much vegetable oil in our daily diet. I don't think any long-term research has been done to date, to my knowledge.
No, and I have been criticized for using population studies, and the more I've thought about this, and I've been working in this area now, not publicly but personally, for 12 years, and the reason I believe that these population studies are so profoundly beneficial and eye-opening is because this represents the real world. You, as we all know, Ken, you can't change diets in people for very long. The longest studies that have completely controlled diets, I mean, everything people eat on a diet are done in metabolic wards. They're extraordinarily expensive and are usually done for days or weeks. The longest I know of is about 6 months, where the diet was completely controlled. And this is what I've maintained to people, over the years, is that all of these diseases that we're so fantastically interested in, heart disease, cancers, Alzheimer's, macular degeneration, most all of these disorders, they take decades to develop, decades of exposure to these elements in our diet to develop. In other words, how often do we see somebody that has a heart attack who's under 40 or who develops Alzheimer's disease under age 50 or develops macular degeneration under age 40? And the list goes on and on. And the reason for that is because that's how long the exposure is. The point is that, these vegetable oils are what I call chronic metabolic biological poisons. These are not acute poisons. These don't kill us overnight. I don't care what the dose is. If you drink a gallon of vegetable oil tonight, you won't die tomorrow. I'm pretty sure. Don't try it. But it's a cumulative toxic load is what happens to us with these. And this is why you have to, in my view, you have to look at the population studies where you know what people are consuming, and they consume them for many years or even decades, or in this case, more than a century of data. And we know this broadly represents what people are consuming. So in this slide, we see that this is vegetable oils and sugar versus obesity. And it's really interesting here that there's a strong disconnect between the correlation between sugars and obesity. If you look at like 1935, we were already at 440 calories worth of sugar, and the vegetable oils were roughly around 120 calories or so. But again, we all know, obesity was only around three or 4% in the 1930s. And, it's an extrapolation, so you have to guess. But you can see here that there's a much stronger correlation between vegetable oils. And even to get the end of this graph, you can see sugar is going down while obesity continues to go up. And it goes up right in line with the vegetable oils once again.
And to be clear with this graph, if this is coming from the data that I think, this is GNA's data, right? So is that right?
Yeah, well, so Stefan GNA, and we have it both, and they're both virtually identical.
Okay, so the sugar shown in this graph in green, that's just the discrete commodity sugar.
No, so it's all of them, Ken.
So, but it's not counting the sugars coming from fruit juices and fruits, fruit juice smoothies, that sort of thing. It's just sugar as a commodity.
Yeah. So it would be, so this comes from all this data, comes from either the Department of Commerce before 1960, primarily, and or after 1961, it comes from the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, the FAO. And we use the same definition for all of this, but the sugars here, they're defined as, this is all, table sugar. So that's cane sugar and beet sugar.
Right.
It is corn syrup, high fructose corn syrup, maple syrups, any other syrups, honey, all added sugars. Anything that is an added sugar to the diet is counted in these numbers as sugar. So yes, the sugars that come, you can't track the sugars that are in fruit or in milk, like, you know, lactose, milk sugar. Those would not be counted in this as sugar. So again, just if it's added sugar, it's in this green, this graph right here, this data. Yes.
Perfect.
Yeah. So, and again, you know, I'm not here when I present this data there, this makes some of this data, I'll just be honest, this makes people angry, because, you know, we have vilified sugar. And I think we've, you know, pointed the finger at sugar, you know, for a lot of things. And I don't care what the answers are, Ken. It makes no difference to me at all. I don't have any vested interest in any of this. My goal is to try to figure out what it is.
Yep.
And I'm not a fan of sugar. I don't eat sugar. And I don't advise people do. Just Ken and I are on the exact same wavelength here. I'm just showing that it is the vegetable oils that appear to be the big driver here.
Yes. Okay. Next slide, doctor.
Sure.
All right.
So this kind of, you know, this one zeroes in on between 1961 and 2018. This is obesity in the United States versus vegetable oil and sugar. And you can see that, you know, between 1961 and 2018, that the sugars have not changed very much. They only went up 14%. The vegetable oils went up 230%. While obesity climbed from 13% all the way to 42.5%. So yep. Once again, you know, you see this, you don't see a very strong correlation here with sugar.
Absolutely. And this is one of the reasons that, because when I looked into this FAO data, I realized that this is talking about added sugar. That's all this is talking about. This is not talking about naturally occurring sugars. And
right,
that's why my number one recommendation was to remove all sugar, both added and naturally occurring, as low as you possibly can, because I think that if you see the sugar start to dip down, it's about the year 2000. And that's when it became very fashionable to eat lots of fruit and vegetables, right? We always said fruits first, and people begin to live on fruit smoothies and drink a gallon of orange juice a day for the vitamin C. And I think if you could, I don't think you probably can't tease it out of this FAO data, but if you could, I think that sugar curve would not turn at about 2000. I think it would, total sugar intake kept right on increasing right along with obesity and vegetable oil. But I agree with Dr. Kenobi completely. If it turns out that vegetable oil is the prime cause of all the chronic disease, then if you listen to my first three principles, you win and I win. If it turns out that the total sugar intake is the predominant driver, you still win and I win. If you just listen to me and Kenobi, you're going to win. So don't mishear this as a debate. We both agree you need to absolutely minimize sugar in your diet and grains in your diet and vegetable seed oils absolutely to the bare minimum.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And I'd restate that all the time so that people don't think I'm advising that they they start filling up their diets with sugar. So I don't want to beat this to death, Ken. Could we go to, because I don't know how much time we have, but can we go to maybe slide 29? Yeah, so here, this is the United States data, and this is obesity versus fat calories and carbohydrate calories. And interestingly, you can see here, I've got a little arrow there that we see carbohydrates declining in the US after 1997. Now, this doesn't, on the carbohydrates and fat calories, this does not distinguish between the different types. There's obviously, in my view, there's good carbohydrates and there's bad carbohydrates. sugar and refined flours are what I would say are, they're the carbohydrates to be avoided. But you can see that carbohydrates have been on the decline since 1997, again, while obesity escalates. So we could probably just move on to, we could probably move on to a different subject, or we could talk about diabetes or whatever you want to do, Ken.
Yeah, let's talk about diabetes, because the people in our private community know that there's an epidemic of diabetes. And so the numbers that you present in this graph, this is the case percentages of diagnosed diabetes. But one of the main problems with going to the doctor for your annual blood work is very often they'll check just a basic metabolic profile, which checks your kidneys, your electrolytes, and a fasting blood sugar. And it's possible to have type 2 diabetes. And if you fasted overnight, you can still have a normal fasting blood sugar. And only if that fasting blood sugar is high does the doctor then say, well, we better check a hemoglobin A1C. And so I would guesstimate that the actual number of cases of diabetes in the USA, that's where this graph is from, is much higher than this. And then if you believe the argument that pre-diabetes is not pre-diabetes, it's just early type 2 diabetes, then we're talking about doubling or tripling the percentage of diabetes in the United States. And I think that's entirely accurate. Go ahead, doctor.
Yes, Ken. Once again, I agree with you completely. And then some. I think the scenarios is at least as bad as you described, if not worse. Interestingly, go back here to this is diabetes versus vegetable oils and sugars in this graph. And I'll describe this for those who would just be listening. But so diabetes, Sir William Osler, one of the most famed physicians in all of history, one of the founding partners of Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore, Maryland, back in the late 19th century, he reported the diabetes prevalence in the year 1890. It was 2.8 per 100,000 people. Now, that is a staggeringly small number, compared to today, which is 13,000 per 100,000. So that's that number right there, 0.0028% in 1890. You can see that by 1935, we were at 0.37% diabetes. And you can see it just the trend continues all the way to 13%. And as Dr. Barry was saying, if you take the number of diabetics, which is reported at around 13% today, the total diabetics and pre-diabetics, now the last figure I saw, 51%, I believe it is, 51%. And then, of course, you look at those that are metabolically unhealthy as high as 93%, right? But I want you to notice on this graph that in 1935, when we had 0.37% diabetes prevalence, it was the first broad review of diabetes in the U.S. since 1890, as far as I know. But anyway, the sugar consumption was high. It was very high. It was 440 calories a day. And then if you look at the sugar consumption all the way at the end in 2016, the sugar only went up 86 calories. It was 526 calories in 2016, I believe it was. But the diabetes went from 0.37% all the way to 13%. In other words, between 1935 and 2016, diabetes went up 35-fold, a 3,400% increase in diabetes while the sugar hardly changed. Now, why is this? Well, it's going up, as you can see, right along with, again, with the vegetable oils. So it's my view that it's the omega-6 that is driving the bulk of the damage here, the mitochondrial damage and the insulin resistance that results in diabetes. And that's what this evidence supports, really.
I've got a question here from Greg and Barb. Either Greg or Barb's a type 1 diabetic, 62 years of age, with macular edema. They're getting the monthly injections, and they're now eating carnivore. Can eating this way help my eyes?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, the brilliant thing about the carnivore diet is that, of course, it would drop your omega-6 consumption to less than 2%. I'm not carnivore myself. I've eaten carnivore three times in my life, up to 20 days. It's just not, it doesn't work well for me long term, but anybody who says that, well, you don't have any evidence to support the carnivore diet. Well, first of all, they didn't look, number one, at Weston Price's research that goes clear back to the 1930s. You know, they looked at the Inuit. Yeah, nutrition and physical degeneration. We absolutely know that the carnivore diet can be an extremely healthy diet. You know, can there be some issues, you know, perhaps with, mineral status for some people and you know, maybe some other issues? Yeah, I think so. But we absolutely know, as going that far back, and then even from more recent studies, Sean Baker is doing, of course, so forth, that we know that the carnivore diet works. In my view, you know, it's and this would, you know, is a different perspective than yours, Ken, but we also see that, you know, historically, very high carbohydrate diets, like the Japanese and the subset of those, the Okinawans, for example, and the Papua New Guineans of Tukasenta, that consumed, you know, more than 80 and even 90% diets as carbohydrate, they also didn't have all these conditions. And the thing that I see that unifies all of these diets, whether they're high carb, low carb, you know, all meat or almost all, you know, rice, and that they all work so much better than a westernized processed food laden diet. And the one thing that unifies these is that they're all under 2% omega-6 linoleic acid. And why are they that low? It is because they all eliminate vegetable oils.
Yes.
Right?
So you've convinced Susan, and she wants to know, if we stop eating all vegetable seed oils today, how long until all of it's out of our body, doctor?
You know, I would say worst case scenario is 3 years. However, I think that because the half-life of omega-6 linoleic acid in the body is 600 to 680 days, just round it off, it's pretty close to 2 years. You can speed this up, you know, by doing the things that Ken advises, you know, that, you know, number one, you stay on an ancestral diet. You're not consuming any sugars, refined flours, or vegetable oils, your nutrient-dense diet. And you exercise, because you will help burn those omega-6 fats. You know, if it works for you and you feel good, you know, intermittent fasting may help you to burn those omega-6s. You've got to burn up those omega-6 fats. And the best way to do that is, you know, if you're way overweight, I would say this is a scenario you might need to, you know, control, you know, reduce your calories, and exercise is where, you know, and of course, you know, eliminate all the vegetable oils. And also, I should mention that there are a couple other sources of omega-6, just so we're complete, is, you know, the animals that are consuming corn and soy who are monogastric animals, that would be chicken and pigs. So chicken and pork will have much higher omega-6 linoleic acid, up to 20%, if they're consuming corn and soy themselves. That's all CAFO-raised animals. I think Ken's covered this many times, but that's all CAFO-raised animals. So you have to get away from those. Now, beef or the ungulates, the, you know, cattle that are, you know, herbivores, they have a multi-stomach type system, and they can biohydrogenate those omega-6 fats into saturated and monounsaturated fats, and they store those in their fat, and that also goes into their milk. And so beef has very low omega-6, even if they're fed, you know, corn and soy. So, but anyway, those are sources of omega-6, and then nuts and seeds are sources of omega-6. So, and nuts and seeds are not a part of any ancestral diets, except for, you know, like the Mongongo nut in only a couple of populations in Africa ever consumed those significantly. And it's because they couldn't get any other food, I think, is the primary reason.
Yep.
So, but those are the ways to get, you know, you've got to get the omega-6 really low, and you might use chronometer to help you evaluate your omega-6 consumption. But you do it by getting the oils out, the polyunsaturated oils out, and, you know, eliminating the, you know, grain fed, the corn and soy fed, chicken and pork, and getting rid of nuts and seeds.
Love it. Thank you for that answer. Where do you want to go to next, Doctor?
Ken, would you drop down to slide number 39? We'll just say one more thing, and I think we've beat, you know, I don't want to beat all this to death.
Okay.
I just want to show everyone here that this is the U.S. sugar and vegetable oil consumption versus diabetes between 1935. This is the absolute change in sugar and vegetable oil consumption between 1935 and 2016. And you can see that sugar went up 1.5% as a percentage of the entire diet. All right. Vegetable oils, however, went up 21.5%. Again, while diabetes went up 35-fold, or 3,400%. So while sugar, you know, took up a little bit more of our typical plate, vegetable oils took up an additional more than one fifth of everyone's diet between 1935 and 2016. In other words, like a fifth of everybody's plate became vegetable oils during this period of time, where it wasn't before. And everybody knows you can look back at all the pictures and all the history, and you'll see that we were fantastically more healthy in the 1930s. Right. So
definitely.
So this is why. I don't know. Where do you want me to go with this, Ken? Or what do you want to?
Wherever your heart leads you, Doctor. What do you want to talk about next?
I don't know how much time we have.
We've got another 30 minutes if you want to go.
We could talk about, just go to the very next slide, the number 40. I think it is. I take it back. Number 42. So this is the New Zealand Maori. And this is data between 1961 and 2018 or 19. And this is an obesity curve in the red there. Let's just focus on that versus sugar and vegetable oils. Now you can see that in New Zealand, they've had really high sugar consumption, pushing 450 to 500 calories a day since the 1960s. But back in 1977, their obesity was 10%. Now the Pacific Islanders are incredibly sensitive to processed foods. And I think they're one of the few populations that can get, you know, gain a lot of weight and probably become diabetic just on processed foods without seed oils, unlike most of the rest of the world. But anyway, if you look at this graph here, you can see that between 1977 in 2017, their obesity went from 10% to 50%. So a fivefold increase, 50% obesity, and another 30 some percent of their population is overweight. I think their total obesity and overweight in the New Zealand Maori is around 84%. So that's staggering. But look at, it's in correlation to the increasing vegetable oils, because again, their sugar didn't change very much. But they're sensitive to all, you know, all the processed foods.
Yes, and certain populations, certain genetic pools are much more sensitive to either the sugar or the grains or the vegetable seed oils. But as we said earlier, it's the dose that makes the poison. And you give this much vegetable seed oil to any human population, and you're going to get a bunch of chronic disease.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, I want to talk about cancer for a minute, Ken.
Oh, good.
We could jump down to slide 52, because I don't want to bore people here. Now, so this is some research that I think is so incredibly important, because I believe the polyunsaturated vegetable oils, and again, I'm going to list those real quick. Ken listed most of them. They are primarily soybean, corn, canola, cottonseed, rapeseed, grapeseed, sunflower, safflower, rice bran, sesame, and peanut oils. These are the oils that are on my worst of the worst list. And we need to, everybody needs to avoid those like the plague. Those are chronic metabolic biological poisons. And we've had, as we talked about earlier, we've had a massive increase in cancer since the 19th century that parallels this increase in vegetable oils. This researcher back in 1987, Clement Ip, I-P is his name, did some incredible research with animals. He put these rodents, rats, on, they were treated with a carcinogen, and then they were exposed to different levels of omega-6 linoleic acid, starting at 0.5% all the way up to, I think, around 7 or, all the way up to 12%, yeah. And you can see here that the cancer increased. All these animals were exposed to the same carcinogen, DMBA. It would induce a type of mammary cancer, a breast cancer, right? But you can see the cancer increased gradually as the omega-6 went up. And then you see right at 4.4% omega-6 linoleic acid, it levels off. We reach a threshold. And so omega-6 linoleic acid increases your risk of cancer drastically. Now, if you look at the research that comes out in the things that Ken and I read, these papers all over, they will take populations and they'll try to stratify the amount of omega-6, you know, vegetable oil that they're consuming, and they'll say, oh, you know, we find no correlation, there's no increase in cancer in people that have consumed more vegetable oils. Here's the answer as to why they come up with that. The cancer threshold is at 4.4% linoleic acid. Remember, you know, we talked about this earlier, that we are now consuming 11.8% omega-6 linoleic acid in the American diet as of 2008. We've been over 4.4% since the 1960s. So in other words, we're way beyond the threshold. Almost no one's consuming less than 4% omega-6 linoleic. Only people maybe a whole lot of the people watching this, your podcast, Ken, and you know, my viewers and some people that believe in ancestral health, they're doing it. But the enormous bulk, you know, probably 96% of the population is not doing this. You know, they don't understand this. So this is a critical point. You have to get these, that if you have cancer or you want to avoid cancer, you have to get these oils out of your diet.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Where to now?
Okay. So, let's, in the same vein, let's go to slide 56 And this shows this. This is vegetable oils and sugar versus overweight and obesity and cancer in China. Now, here's the interesting thing is that China has the eighth lowest sugar consumption in the world. You can see here on the graph that since the 1980s, I believe it is, they've been ranging between about 60 to 80 calories of sugar. That's only 2.5% at it, you know, in recent numbers, 2.5% of their diet is sugar. That's, again, it's the eighth lowest in the world. It's amongst the lowest in the world. That equates to, roughly 4 or 5 teaspoons of sugar per day, right? And everybody can see here that their vegetable oils have gone way up. You know, from 1961, they were down at around 30 calories per day. And now, as of 2018, they're up there, above 200 calories per day. So look at their overweight and obesity, and I don't have the numbers on there, but their overweight and obesity, I think, went from a total of about 20, or I think it's around 18 or 19% actually, on the overweight and obesity up to, I'm sorry, that's the red line. I'm looking at the wrong line here, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, Ken, but their overweight and obesity has gone from, I can't remember the exact numbers, but it's very, very low in the 1980s up to around 45%. Oh, there it is. I'm looking at the wrong axis, Ken. So it was around 15% up to about 42.5% on the overweight and obesity, right in line with the vegetable oils. Now look at, if you see this, you can look at the orange curve, and that's the cancer, and the cancer incidence, this is all cancers, it was around 500 again, around 1980, and much more recently, around 2016, I believe it is, the cancer incidence is around 1,500. In other words, cancers went up about threefold during this period. Why? Once again, right in line with the vegetable oils. The sugar has not changed during this time, as anyone who's looking at this can see, but they're overweight and obesity and cancer absolutely through the roof.
Fascinating. I've never seen that data out of China before.
Yeah, that is really interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
So we could look at maybe one, I don't know, should we take time to look at Japan?
Yeah, let's look at Japan.
Okay, so go to, Ken, maybe if you go to slide 68.
Okay,
so here what we'll notice is this is the mostly the macronutrients on here, but we've also got the vegetable oils, the total fat, the saturated fat. So this is sort of a complete, evaluation of what's happened with the food in Japan since 1950. But we're going to concentrate on what happened between 1960, which is where we see this first inflection point. So we see that in Japan since 1960, total calories have been going down. They went down by practically a third. And then right below that, their carbohydrates since 1960 have been going down. And I might mention here that their carbohydrates were at 84% of the diet in 1961. All right. And I'm going to look at the numbers so I don't give the numbers wrong here. I'm looking at them myself. And so the carbohydrates went down to 56% by 2004 to 2010. Now the fat went up. The fat was at 5% in 1960 and went to 27% between 2004 and 2010. Now their saturated fat is recently 7%. It's the lowest in the world in all developed nations. But now look at the vegetable oils. They were at, in 1961, they were at 9 grams a day. And by 2000, four, they're at 39 grams a day. Okay. So we have, let me just summarize this. We have in Japan since 1960, calories going down, carbohydrates going down. And then, I need to point out sugar, which I passed up. It increased from 1960 up to 1989. And then we see this huge, drop in sugar after 1989, right through, 2010. All right. So we've got, okay. So recently we have calories going down, carbohydrates going down, sugar going down, total fat going up, and the vegetable oils going up. Okay. Now, if we could drop down to the next slide, Ken. So now in relation to all that, notice that this is obesity in men. The obesity in men went from 16% in the late 1970s to 31.2% in 2009. It doubled. So obesity doubled in men. Didn't do this in women, but in men, while the calories, carbohydrates, and sugar went down. But right in line with the vegetable oils, right? And then we can go down to the next slide, Ken. And this is diabetes. And diabetes way back in Japan in 1954 was 0.02%. That's 2 per 10,000. And by the end of this graph, that's in 2006 or 7, I believe it was, their diabetes was 6.9%. That is a 345-fold increase in diabetes. Curiously, while the calories went down, carbohydrates went down, and sugar went down. But look at it. It's the vegetable oils going up.
Very interesting.
It's always, this is what I keep seeing everywhere. So can we go to the next slide?
Yes.
Okay. So in this slide, now this is breast cancer. And this is the, again, all the other data is the same. Again, right? We've got calories going down, sugar and vegetable oil. I'm sorry. Calories, carbohydrates, and sugar going down recently. Vegetable oil is going up. Look at the breast cancer between 1976, I believe it was, it's at 21.7 per 100,000. It climbs all the way up to, by 1999, I think it is, to 101.4. So breast cancer goes up right at about fivefold, right in line with the vegetable oils, right?
That's a scary, scary slope.
Isn't it though? And the other major cancers went up too, but this one, I presented this one because it's actually the probably the worst. Okay, and if we go to the next slide. Okay, all the same data, ladies and gentlemen, in Japan, but macular degeneration, age-related macular degeneration was 0.2% in the late 1970s, and by 2013, it was 16.37%. Again, right in line with the vegetable oils, while the calories, carbohydrates, and sugar are on the decline, macular degeneration has increased since the 1970s 82-fold. 82-fold, right? Mm-hmm. Because this is what they didn't have. This is why, the Japanese and the Okinawans were once so fantastically healthy, and now they're not. In Okinawa, 50% of the men over age 40 are obese in Okinawa.
Wow.
Yeah.
So much for that blue zone.
Exactly. Yeah. They lost their longevity in the last couple of decades.
And if we can that really kind of destroys the genetic argument for their longevity. It was obviously something in their environment, most likely something in their diet that they weren't doing that contributed to their long lifespan. And now they're not doing that anymore. And their lifespan now approaches the global average, I would imagine, if not maybe a little bit higher than the global average, but nowhere near the heights it used to attain.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what's happening.
Wow. So yeah, I think so many of our people in our private community are convinced. Greg and Barb ask, okay. So they want to go out and eat two or three times a week, or they do at a restaurant. If they're just eating carnivore at the restaurant, are they going to be getting too much vegetable seed oil in that scenario on average, or if you know, I tell people, if you're going to eat in a restaurant, just eat some steak off the grill, because they really can't adulterate that much. But what say you about this question?
Exactly the same as you, Ken.
Yeah. I agree. Eat the meat.
I think we're all, if we travel, we're forced to eat in restaurants almost. It's pretty hard to avoid it. I think the safest thing is for all of us to prepare our own food as much as possible. But there are some restaurants that really care and will, you know, and if you tell them you're, just be honest, I just say, you know, I'm allergic to vegetable oils.
Same. That's exactly what I do too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I thought, Ken. And so that's what I say. And, I have friends who use that line and, we're fibbing a little bit, but yeah, it's our
health. I don't think so. I don't think we're fibbing. I think we're being perfectly honest. I think that's an absolute truth and fact. We're not going to have an anaphylactic reaction if they cook our food in vegetable seed oils, but we are going to suffer some degree of harm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Doc, this has been fascinating. Do you have one or two slides you want to finish up with, or is that this a good place for you? Do you have any Grand Slam slides toward the end that we need to look at?
Let me show one world slide that I just think everybody should see.
Perfect.
Perhaps go to slide 77, if you would, Ken.
You saved the best for last.
This is what I want everybody to see here, is that, this has not been published yet. It's pending publication. I'm sorry, this slide got messed up a little bit in transit, but if we go back and we've analyzed the world's consumption of vegetable oils since 1865, and that's in the blue there between 1865 and 1960, and then from 1961 forward, all the green is the actual known vegetable oil consumption. But the point is that the world didn't have any vegetable oils in 1865, essentially. All right. There are tiny amounts here and there without getting into the nitty gritty, tiny, tiny amounts overall. And yet by today, the average person is consuming, let me get that number for it so I don't misquote it, 65.4 grams of total oils. Now, some of those are good, like coconut oil and palm kernel oil. And there's some good quality olive oil, but in general, you know, most of these oils are just not healthy and they need to be avoided. And this is why the whole world is getting sick, you know, is what I believe is the main reason.
This has been eye-opening. Thank you so much for doing this, Doc. Now, I hear rumors that you've got a book coming out soon.
Yes. Yes, I do. And there's a picture of it on your very last or second to last slide there, Ken.
Got
106, if you want to show it.
Yep, I'll show it. 106, yeah. There we go. All right, the Ancestral Diet Revolution.
That's it. And that covers what we've talked about and a whole lot more. But anyway.
When will this book be available, and will there be an Audible?
Okay. It'll be available at online book retailers like Amazon, Barnes & Noble in early May, so just in a few weeks. And we will get an Audible version, but it won't be ready that soon. So that may it's going to take a few weeks to get that, after it's launched. But that's the book. And I'll just say, Ken, if I could say it, I work for, two nonprofit foundations, Cure AMD Foundation and Ancestral Health Foundation. These are nonprofit organizations. Our goals are to do this, to do research and to eventually do research on ancestrally living populations, comparing them to their westernized cohorts in the cities who have westernized their diets. I want to walk in the footsteps of Weston A. Price in a 21st century version type of research. And so we need support to do that. That's very expensive research. And we're supported really only by philanthropists.
That's awesome. So I love that.
Get that word out. Anybody who wants to support our mission, the people that work for these organizations, like I are same as myself, are unpaid. We are volunteers for this organization because we believe in this cause.
If you'll shoot me the link for that website, I'll definitely put that in the show notes in case anybody wants to support the work that you're doing. It sounds like amazingly helpful work. Dr. Chris Kenobi, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. And I have learned a few things today that I did not know. And I hope that everybody who watches this can say the same. This has been amazing. Thank you so much for doing this.
Well, Dr. Barry, thank you so much. It's been an honor and a pleasure to be on your show. I really appreciate you helping us.
All right, brother. See you next time.
Absolutely. Okay, take care. See you later. Bye.